Welcome to SMFMS Bookends, a satellite show for Save Me From My Shelf, coming out every week after our proper episode. On this show, we read listener letters, answer questions, include extra analysis and episode outtakes, and have a brief chat about the things we're currently reading, watching, or playing. Hello, you are listening to SMFMS Bookends. Bubble and squeak over here is Daniel.
Roadkill.
Is that it?
I don't know what bubble and squeak is. What is that?
It's leftover potato and cabbage and veg and stuff, and you just kind of fry it up the next day and eat it. And I was imagining that Americans eat roadkill as a kind of leftovers thing. That's what was going on there.
We just have leftovers because we have big American fridges.
Yeah, but I can't just say leftovers. I said roadkill.
Should we just get straight to some listener letters?
Gladly.
Because you and I have just recorded Ivanhoe and we are fucking exhausted.
Here's one from Braden from Nova Scotia.
Ooh.
We've had a few follow-ups from
Nova Scotia,
New Scotland, haven't we? Yeah. Braden says, hello, Freedom Fries and Bangers and Mash. Very good.
Now, careful, Braden, because while that is very funny, I only have so many names on my list. I was looking at my list today of things to call Daniel, and it's whittling down. So I don't want this to become a trend, because people are going to take the few names that I have. And
that's good. I want people to do that. That would be really funny. I was thinking that Nova Scotia, halfway between America and Britain, he's very well placed to make these points.
Yeah.
This is a deep cut, but as a Scotian, you might be surprised to know we're all about Donair. It's like Conair, isn't it, the film? Large Lebanese establishment, you see. I have never heard the term Donair. I'm wondering, is it the same root as Donna? It's like a kebab, right, though, isn't it?
I'm guessing. This was in reference to our Macbeth episode.
Thank you, when I asked what the Nova Scotians eat, or Scotians, as they apparently call themselves.
I don't believe that. I think he's trying to make you sound like a tit. I don't think they call themselves Scotians.
Okay, well.
And
Nova Scotian questions. It's the land that keeps bringing up new queries. Anyway, keep up the great work. Thank you, and slam to Maith. Is that like Irish or something? Or
Slantia, isn't it?
Okay. Love from your Haligonian Halifax pal, Braden. Quite a confusing email, that, for one of so few words. There's a lot of funny words in there. Haligonian means from Halifax, apparently, but...
Oh, Braden, Daniel is trying to solve some sort of unholy calculus.
Yeah.
He doesn't know which way is up after that.
Hi, Abby. This is from Nicola. Hi, Abby. Hi, Daniel. Just wanted to let you know that listening to you two often helps keep me awake on the bus home from a night shift.
Oh, I wonder what you do.
I was thinking that. Is it night with a K?
It's not night with a K.
Okay, because I heard someone on the radio say that the nights in the Crusades, the only way that the Crusaders could beat the Turks was through night fights. So I wonder if she's coming back from it. Well, anyway.
You could be working out of medieval times. That's a night shift.
Yeah. What? I don't get that.
Oh, you don't have medieval times. It's a theme restaurant.
Oh, when there's ones where you sit there and there's and you eat and there's a tournament.
Yes.
Yeah, okay. I've listened to every episode up until now, and I often pick one I particularly enjoyed the first time to keep me company when I'm cooking, too. The Macbeth episode is quickly becoming a favourite for that.
That might be my favourite episode as well. We need more episodes, Daniel, where you scream in a child's voice with a heavy accent. That's the secret to our success.
Well, next episode might be quite sort of good for that. Maybe it's because I'm Scottish but living in England, and any reminder of home is welcome. I like that, any reminder of home is welcome. It's not a good reminder, because we've had a bit of pushback from the Scots, haven't we, from that episode. And this is sort of like, I appreciate it, but it wasn't good. That's what I'm getting from that. Also, I can very much relate to Daniel's quiz show's answer when you were talking about what shows you were both watching on the Bookends episode. I probably watch too many, and I just wanted to ask, do you have any favourites?
Oh, Nicola, you are opening up a whole can of worms. Does Daniel have favourites?
Yeah.
On three, what's your favourite? One, two, three.
University Challenge. Yeah, I like University. I like Only Connect is good. In the summer, when both of those are off, sometimes I listen to Brain of Britain on the radio just to get a bit of a kind of quiz. It's like the sort of quiz methadrone or whatever. It's that thing that people have when they're trying to...
Methadone.
Methadone. Thank you, methadrone.
Yeah, you're a methadrone.
Very good. So those are my favourites. I was on University Challenge, wasn't I?
Guys, look up... Can you remind us? It's on YouTube. Can you let us...
You'll just have to find it. But the episode where we lost is on YouTube. The episode where we did very well is not, which is annoying.
Daniel did his undergrad at Liverpool many moons ago. He was a tiny little baby of 20.
Can't remember.
I think so. It's really funny to watch your little baby face.
I feel like I look pretty much the same.
Because you've had some work done,
maybe? That pause says everything. Yeah. I think I probably look a bit better now, actually. I'll tell you what. The reason I lost is because, well, our team lost. There were two reasons. One, we had a really good woman on our team, and she was in the Sealed Knot or something, you know, where they reenact battles, mm-hmm. Civil War battles, and she said she got bonked on the head of a pike, so she lost all of her powers. Also, I stayed up late that night and played diplomacy. So I was very tired in the morning and didn't want to do a quiz and appear on the telly, but that's what I was doing.
What time did they film it? Was it like an early morning thing?
No, but we had to get to Manchester. I think I had to get up at like 6 or 7, which when you've been playing diplomacy till 3 in the morning, that's quite early.
It's a quintessential nerd college
adventure.
Boy.
Yeah.
Can we please just say what that one person online said about you?
Someone said that I have murderer's eyes, which I didn't like. Is that what you meant?
Yeah, but you do.
I've got murderer's eyes because I'm annoyed that you brought it up. Anyway, looking forward to future episodes. Nicola. Thank you, Nicola. This is in pursuance to our font typeface chat. What's your favourite typeface? Remember we talked about that?
Dimly, I could not tell you what episode that was on.
Yeah, this is from Alexis, who's one of our Patreons.
Ooh, our patron.
Big kiss your lovely ring.
I...
That's what you do to your patron, isn't it? Okay. Anyway, hi Abby and Daniel. I wanted to share that my current favourite font is Spectral, designed by Production Type on commission for Google. Bit of background here, I like that. And drawing in inspiration from French Elsevier typefaces. And now, unlike in the book club, I don't have anything more to say. Have a good show. So, but that's one for you then. That's he's written the email in it, and it's a serif one. So well done you.
I was slightly worried that Spectral was going to be just a bit of a tarted up papyrus with a name like that, but this is actually lovely.
Well, it would have all like dripping, like the Goosebumps writing.
Ooh.
Maybe that's my new favourite. Is that a serif or a sans serif? That's in its own novelty category, isn't it? Great, thank you for that. More typefaces, please, preferably more sans serif ones.
You don't have to, though.
So, finally, we've got one from Sarah. Can you please, please, please? That's three pleases.
All right.
Do Kindred. I know you already did Parable of the Sower, but I'd love to create an assignment for my students based on the book and your episode. Thank you.
Oh, Sarah, I'd love to hear that you'd want to create an assignment for your students around that. That's very charming. I love Kindred. I actually like Kindred a lot more than Parable of the Sower. Let's investigate, actually, how much that's taught. Because I would love to do more Octavia Butler.
No, it's a good book, that. Yeah, I like that.
Yeah, so let us have a think about that. We have the schedule for this year all planned. But, you know, I'm sure it'll be before too long that we'll start planning next year's schedule. And now for our segment, Bad Goodreads Reviews, The Remedial Sessions. And today, we are doing Wuthering Heights. Heathcliff is one of the worst characters I have ever read about. He manipulates everyone around. He has no love in his heart, either, only obsession. One might compare him to Severus Snape from Harry Potter. 1 star. My favorite thing is seeing your reactions behind the camera. I hated them all, and their weak constitutions. 1 star.
I think that's a half good review.
Don't get me started on the relationships here. Everyone just married some bitch next door and called it a day. 1 star. This review made me actually a bit mad. I try not to be a hater, especially of art, but I'm glad Emily stopped writing after this and just let her sisters write instead because this was awful. 1 star. She died! She died the next year! She didn't graciously step back and say, Charlotte, you're the talented one. She perished! What the fuck are you talking about? This godforsaken book isn't human nature. It's the darkest place in someone's heart where the devil resided.
Okay. That sounds like it could be a good review. That's the problem. A lot of these sound like they could be compliments.
I'm like, sign me up. Yeah. There are ghosts, but they don't do anything more than the people do. 1 star. Kathy was a spiteful bitch, and Heathcliff was the most obnoxious, cruel, evil, scumbag creature, so they deserved each other, in my opinion. Revolting. And as for the rude staff that worked there, their asses need sacking. 1 star. Who was rude? Am I misremembering? I'm like, who was rude?
Joseph? I didn't understand him. Maybe he was saying rude things.
You know what? Maybe. He's like the Charlie Brown teacher, and maybe clearly only some people can understand it. Daniel, I don't want to upset you with this next one, but your ex-girlfriend wrote a review.
Okay, great.
My ex-boyfriend loves this book. He's a small-dicked British man, so it makes sense.
Very good. I love those sorts of jokes.
And now, some analysis and outtakes from our episode on Ivanhoe.
So, there we go. Trouble for Prince John. When did he become king, then?
He didn't, he's just regent.
But he was, there was a King John.
Oh, yeah, like, three years later.
Hooray!
It's like, really, ah, soon. I mean,
so it's fine,
yeah,
then, for him, pretty much. He's like the Grover Cleveland of the English monarchy. He turns up, explains, the Grandmaster gets angry, as you might expect. Not at Bois Guilbert, who has broken his vows of celibacy, and is generally a dillweed. What is a dillweed?
Sorry, I wrote that. It's like a dill hole, or a dick bag, or a... You know, take your pick, really.
Dillweed makes... Sounds like you have that, like an American way of saying dill or something, that you would just say dillweed. Salmon and dillweed, it was delicious.
I just like hearing you say dillweed. I love writing these scripts because I get to make you say things that I feel the Americanness of them degrades you.
It does a little bit. Dillweed could be a character in this, couldn't it, as well? One of the Texans.
Oh, Master Dillweed over there.
Yeah.
This is a book that has so many theoretically exciting moments in it told in the most boring possible way. It's a real letdown.
Yeah.
I blame the film Matilda because she reads Ivanhoe in that, and as a kid I was like, that book looks fantastic.
And it's called Moby Dick, Daddy. It's lovely. She reads Moby Dick.
She also reads Ivanhoe and she cries and her tears hit the pages.
Matilda's weird though, isn't she? We're all really the Wormwoods. That's the point of that film, isn't it? Is that we're really the Wormwoods.
It is true. I like to go around to all the other people in the department and say, you chose books. I chose looks. Now I have a beautiful home, a loving husband.
It's very good. That film's like very, I think that film was very influential of a certain generation.
You and I, yeah, I think, probably both watched that quite a bit as kids.
When I saw that in the cinema, I was like,
You must have been fairly young.
I was young, and I was like, this can't be happening. I was like, this is like a nightmare. Because the parents and the teacher are just, the head teacher is so horrible, aren't,
yeah,
they? And I think, I'm a very sensitive soul, and I just didn't appreciate, aww, the kind of grotesque, and that it was like a kind of caricature world. I was just like, this is horrible. I saw the musical actually on stage, and I think the mics were a bit fucked up or something.
Oh,
I couldn't hear really any of the lyrics, and I could hear that they were quite clever lyrics, but I couldn't actually hear them.
You're just assuming, you're inferring. They have a knowing smile when they sing the lyrics, so I guess it's quite clever.
No, I was far away, but I could occasionally pick out funny, yeah, rhymes and stuff, and I was like, oh, if I could hear this properly, this would be really good.
See, okay, here's my thing. I am getting really tired of things constantly being mined to turn into musicals. Do we need a Mrs. Doubtfire musical? Do we need a Matilda the musical?
Is there a Mrs. Doubtfire musical?
Yes, and I'm just like, what other IP from the 90s can we mine rather than writing something original?
You were writing a musical the whole time? The whole time? Sorry. Yeah, no, you're right. It's cynical. And
were you mad because Sally Field goes, Daniel, like, the whole time?
Yeah,
I love the way
Daniel, yeah.
I watched that the other day, and I was like, Sally Field, she says Daniel the way I want to say Daniel sometimes.
Last time I saw that film, I had swine flu. People don't believe that I had swine flu, but it was undoubtedly swine flu.
I'm sure.
And I cried my eyes out.
Laughing or just...
crying.
Okay.
Especially at that bit at the end.
She's right, though. They played her as some shrewish wife, and the whole time, like, I saw this not very long ago, and the whole time I'm like, yeah, you should have kicked his ass to the curb.
I think we're meant to think she's right.
Are we?
Yeah, I think we're meant to think that she's right, but think that he's sympathetic because he's a fun guy.
I think as a kid, though, it's like, mean mom just doesn't get it, and as an adult, I'd be like, I would lose my fucking mind if I came home from a long day of work to find my husband had quit his job, undermined my punishment of my underachieving son, and there's a fucking pony in my house.
Yeah. The point of him becoming Mrs. Doubtfire is that he learns how to do those things.
No, I suppose that, but I think...
But it's already too late. But that's the tragedy.
But it's that tragedy that moms are always the disciplinarian, so even when they're right, they're not sympathetic.
Yeah, no, that's true.
And
yeah.
As a kid, you know, especially with a very severe mother, I was like, she just doesn't get it.
Mm.
And he just needed to learn how to cook.
Or get a takeaway.
I'm always revolted by that takeaway he gets.
It looks horrible, yeah.
It looks really, like, greasy. Strange. And she comes in and she's like, oh, because there are candles lit. But I'm like, yeah, but look at what's on your plate. Does that look good to you, Sally Field?
That's why it's candle lit, isn't it? Probably see the shit.
Ah, Daniel, our bloopers are just getting better and better.
They're better than the real stuff, aren't they? That's the thing.
Now, for our new segment that we're trying out, and I'm going to warn you guys, this is going to be an explicit bit, so if you don't want to hear sexy things, maybe fast forward about a minute, because we are about to do the Bad Literature Sex Awards. So this award started in 1993, and the winner, Daniel, was somebody you're a big fan of, Melvin Bragg.
He's an enemy of the podcast, that's what he is. So I'm glad we're finally throwing shade at him after they keep ripping off our episodes.
So he wrote this book, A Time to Dance, about a love affair between a retired bank manager and an 18-year-old girl in Cumbria.
That already sounds weird, I have to say.
I wanted to find all of the nominees, but I could not for the life of me find them. I spent a really long time online. If anyone can find access to all of the nominees in 1993, I'd be very grateful. All I have is the winning passage. Daniel, I think you're going to have to read this because I can't bring myself to do it.
Shall I do my Melvin voice?
Make it sexy, though, not like your normal voice.
We came together, do you remember? Always tenderly, at first standing like a chivalric introduction to what was to be a voluptuous, sensual battle. Just stood and kissed like children, simply. Body to body, skin to skin, you slightly stirring against me, myself disregarding for those seconds the ram of sex aching below.
The ram of sex?
No, I don't like that.
No! Yeah.
And then we would be on the bed and I touching you, hungry. Should have eaten before. Eyes closed, fingers inside you, reaching into the melting fluid rubbered silk.
Melting fluid rubbered silk.
You feel so seen. A relief map of mysteries. The eager clitoris reeking of you.
Oh, no.
Our tongues imitating our fingers. Your hands gripping and stroking me, but also careful not to excite too much. And so I would f*** you gently, and then more strongly, and finally thrusting hard, and suddenly let everything go. Slam into me, you used to say. How are you just slamming to me? Wow. That was truly terrible. Pretty revolting.
I don't really feel like I can meet your eyes.
Yeah, I didn't like that. Yeah, it was weird. That deserved everything it got. Anyway, thanks for that.
Thank you for that.
Yeah.
Everyone, you can light a cigarette now. I know that was a titillation for the ages.
It's like, you know, in the Alan Partridge, Alan's deep bath. People are going to be listening to it. Yeah, anyway.
So here are some more general questions or points. What is your favorite Robin Hood adaptation? Because we just had Robin Hood kind of feature as a character in Ivanhoe. I was wondering, do you have a favorite?
It's got to be the Disney one, the cartoon.
The Disney one has its draws, certainly.
Because you fancy the fox.
Everyone fancies the fox. He's got that lovely...
I like the hen.
Oh, my petal!
Exactly.
I'm coming,
yeah.
The lady!
She's really good.
I don't know, it's, you know what it is about the fox? It's the voice actor.
Yeah, no, he is.
He has so much personality.
No, yeah. No, it is good.
Mine is obviously Prince of Thieves.
Yeah, which I don't like.
I know you don't, but that's because my dad looks shockingly like Kevin Costner to the point that people stop us on the street or have done asking if he's Kevin Costner. And so when I was little, he used to tell me that he was Kevin Costner's stunt double on the film. And so I grew up hearing all these really cool stories about, like, oh, Morgan Freeman said this really funny thing to me one day, or Alan Rickman played this practical joke on us. And then when I was about 10, he was like, yeah, Abby, I'm a farmer from Vermont. Like, I have a John Deere dealership. How would I have gotten into stunt work? So, yeah, I was always very charmed by that one. Also, the Errol Flynn version does slap.
I haven't seen that. It's supposed to be very good.
It's very good, yeah. Are there any film or literary cliches that you're always happy to see? Is there ever a bit that turns up in a movie where you're like, oh yeah, do the thing?
I'm trying to think now. You go first.
You know this about me. You know that I love any heist film.
Oh yeah.
I will watch any heist film, no matter how bad. But my favorite bit is when they spread out the map on a table and they move the little figurines around showing how the plan's going to work. And then inevitably some part of it is going to go wrong. And I like to try to predict from the map scene.
And sometimes the camera's above, isn't it?
Yeah.
The backs of their heads around.
Yeah.
Saying that's making me quite like that. I don't even like those films, but yeah, go on.
I also love any baseball montage. I'm not big on sports films generally. It strictly must be a baseball montage. It's thrilling. That's something about that crack of the bat. You pair that with some good music.
You know, this is annoying, right? But just thinking about last week when we were talking about lazy food writing motif, I do kind of like that as well. I see what you're doing. I know it's working. It annoys me. It's bad writing, but it's nice to see that you're making some kind of an effort. You want.
Yeah.
It's nice to see you've got good intentions, even if you can't execute them especially well.
Yeah.
Love a good Dickensian clerk. Is that a literary cliche?
You do anything about like sort of office work. When you and I watched The Woman in Black together, your favorite bit of that very scary horror movie was when Daniel Radcliffe was like stabbing the done receipts on that like filer thing.
Yeah.
You were like, oh, that's so cool. And I was like, that's what you're
talking about. One of those old files, yeah. Before, yeah, that is interesting. Before the filing cabinet, you had a big wire.
What is your ideal cinema double billing?
I can't. It's have to be two short films because I don't have the stamina to watch two films in succession.
Oh, or to watch one day and one the next day if you can't do back-to-back.
You go first.
So I came up with three.
Whoa.
Somebody asked me that the other day and I was like, that's a great question. So I talked last time about having just seen Priscilla and I thought watching that after you watch Elvis, the Baz Luhrmann Elvis, would be a great double feature. I also thought Cabaret and Hedwig and the Angry Inch would be really good. It's about insufferable showbiz divas in Germany and the queer men who love them. And then Singing in the Rain and Chicago, two different perspectives of the 1920s show business and media industries.
I'm just thinking of really bad ones now. I'm thinking of this is weird that these are both by Steven Spielberg, but I mean, it's not weird, but I was just thinking Indiana Jones and Schindler's List.
I could see that.
Well, they kind of work together, but you'd be watching Schindler's List and be thinking like, it's in the same universe and somewhere else some guy's running around. And you know what I mean? Like, there's something, strangely banal about having them next to each other.
But they're roughly the same time period. There are Nazis in both.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking.
You know?
Comical bumbling Nazis, evil, psychotic Nazis. I think I'd just be completely thrown. Think that'd be good? You'd watch that.
Well, Schindler's List first, and then you need Indiana Jones to pick you up at the end.
Oh, yeah.
And see a Nazi get punched into a propeller blade.
Could have been Klaus Kinski. Didn't want to do it. Ooh, thinking of that, I'm thinking about Werner Herzog now. It'd be cool to watch like a documentary and then you know what I mean? Yeah. I don't know. Sorry, I never watch two films. Sometimes I watch a film in two parts. You know, if I'm tired.
Yeah.
Does that count?
And you watch like 16 episodes of The Simpsons, which tuckers you out for the day. That's
it. Yeah, there we go. Yeah, that's it. What about West Side Story and
the new West Side Story?
No, I was going to say Dr. Strangelove.
Oh, go on.
I just thought boys playing like men playing like boys, you know, and they're both kind of Cold War allegories or something.
I like that. That's a good one.
Thank you. There you go. Just spitballing here.
Have you seen any films lately?
The Misfits.
Oh, very nice.
What if Marilyn Monroe went to Nevada? That's the premise, isn't it? What about you?
I saw a film that is Save Me From Myself-centric. Last night I went to the cinema and I saw The Color Purple.
Ah.
It's the musical.
Ah.
I'm a big fan of the book. I'm a big fan of the 1985 Steven Spielberg film. I walked out of this one.
Oh, wow.
And it's getting a ton of really good reviews, and I feel like I'm going insane because did we see the same film?
What's wrong with it?
Well, I could talk to you about that for about an hour.
Okay.
There's little evidence of adaptation from the stage to the screen. So, like, every big musical number, I'm like, oh, the crew better get ready to change the flats around because here's the next big production number. Like, I thought that was really bad. The director and choreographer had competing visions sometimes, I felt. The costuming, the sound was atrocious. There were times where I'm like, I'm sorry, can we find a mic somewhere on stage today? And there were the wildest anachronisms. But the thing that annoyed me was that it pulled its punches and completely defanged the book. So apart from Seely, everyone seemed to have a pretty good life in this. It's really glossy and happy. Everyone was all of a sudden really middle class.
No, I don't like that. There's a lot of class washing in film, though, isn't there?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And it was really, like, despite being this very small backwoods town, it felt slightly urbane and everyone was, like, really trendy. Mm. The person I saw it with leaned over to me after the first few numbers and they said, wow, who knew that being a black person in Georgia in 1909 was okay? Mm-hmm.
I kept thinking that about Ivanhoe. I kept thinking about Saxon Wall Street, you know, like Tulsa.
Yeah.
I don't know why I kept thinking that, but I thought, is that a thing? Anyway.
Well, it just annoyed me because the thing that I love about the book and the other film is that it's about perseverance through adversity, right? That's the thing that's really beautiful about it. And it felt like this book just was like, how about we do away with the adversity?
Yeah. No, there's loads of that, isn't there? I think there's a lot of, yeah, class washing, I want to call it.
Right. You got any other media? Any video games? Any books?
No.
It's the same every time, Danny.
Yeah. Where's the music? You keep cutting the music. I keep saying it every week and you cut it.
What music did you say last time?
I just thought I'd make that up. The conspiratorial element. In the first bookends, I said The Royal Wedding 1568 was my album of the year. And you cut that. So I'm going to say it again. Royal Wedding 1568 was my album of the year.
I was trying to protect you.
Yeah.
Nobody needs to hear that. I'm going to pretend I didn't hear that.
Very good. 15, Orlando de Lassus. Who's Flemish? I don't know why I'm doing that voice. But, oh, I've gone early music crazy.
Was that for when you were looking at music for the Paradise Lost episode?
No. But that gave it a second wind. All through the year I'd been listening to early music, and then Paradise Lost really, like, you know, drove me crazy. So, yeah, right
at
the end.
Yeah, we can tell.
Yeah, yeah. So there you go.
You got anything else to add there, buddy?
No. That's all I listen to. The Royal Wedding, 1568, is my album of the year. You can't say that in March or whenever this comes out, can you?
All right, guys. This is a bust right now. We're so tired, and we probably want to kick each other in the knees right now because we've been locked in my office for hours.
Hooray!
So, with that in mind, we will be back soon with a brand new episode, and we will talk to you later. At you, really. We're not talking with you. We'll talk at you later. Okay, please let me out of this hell of my own making.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Thanks for listening to Save Me From My Shelf. Our music is The Overture to Don Giovanni by Mozart, and cover art is by Catherine Wu. Our thanks to Aston University's Center for Critical Inquiry into Society and Culture for funding the startup of this podcast. Contact us at savemefrommyshelf@gmail.com or at smfms_podcast on Twitter. And do not, I'm going to remind you, do not forget to rate, review, and subscribe. Do not forget. Thank you.